wasn't proud of myself for the way that I showed up in that relationship.
He is a vegan bodybuilder.
Nemai Delgado.
This guy, Nemai Delgado.
That book blew my mind whenever I read it. If money comes as a byproduct of me doing what I love, and what I love is service, money is just a reflection of that service. Breakups are catalysts, man. Your thoughts shape your reality. So what you think about most, what you focus on most, is what you get.
Nemai, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
My opening question for you is from someone who is much smarter than me, looks better than me. It's from my lovely girlfriend, Mariana. You've met her.
Yes.
And I asked her this morning, like, what should I ask Nemai? And she was like, I give you an entire list with questions. The first one is about your upbringing, because I think it's quite interesting. And she grew up in a Hindu community, and I think you did as well. And I don't think that many people know. So maybe tell us a bit about that journey or how it was for you. She specifically asked, like, must have been tough to, you know, go to a normal public school as a vegetarian. I used to make fun of vegetarians at school, so maybe walk us through that journey.
You were one of those.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So I grew up in a Hare Krishna community in South Mississippi. And that's very uncommon. And I didn't realize it was uncommon until I was a bit older. So I was raised there until about 8 years old. And once I started to gain awareness that, hey, our community is really different than the surrounding community, we kind of leave this bubble and go into, they call it Maya. You know, the Maya is like the real world. And the real world is the illusion. That's what it translates to. So my parents would always refer to off the farm, which was the community, as the illusion. So that was the kind of the framework in which I was raised, along with all of the other Hindu beliefs. And one of those, of course, being vegetarian, following the concept of ahimsa, which just translates to nonviolence and compassion towards all living beings through your thoughts, words, actions, deeds, all of it. So it was very normal for me growing up in this community because it was all I knew. But as I grew older and eventually went to public school, of course, it brought its own challenges, because here I was, I remember very vividly going to kindergarten, which is a German word. I'm sure you know it. So I went to kindergarten in more traditional Hindu clothing. So my parents were very, I wouldn't say unaware. They just kind of did their own thing always, never with malintention or anything. They just kind of sent me to school that way. So of course it was received differently from children who didn't know any better and would make judgments. And it wasn't until I was, like, you know, deep into like kindergarten or first grade that I kind of really started to become aware of, like, hey, my food's different. I have to, like, kind of explain myself. And then it just kind of kept happening. So
was it the first time that you left that bubble?
No, like, it wasn't. We would leave and venture out and, like, go get groceries and all the normal things, but we would always come back to this community where, you know, it was very communal. I can't stress this enough. Everybody in the community had their own role, their own position, their own contributions, their own families. We would call all the mothers in the community mother. So we were quite literally herded, you know, like a group of kids would go to, like, one of the family's house, and one mother would watch all the kids and then take turns. And it was very, very communal in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then we had a temple, which we would visit at 5 a.m. every single day, and then different ceremonies and different services. And we'd have a Sunday feast every Sunday, which was open to the public as well, where they would serve prasad, which is essentially karma-free food. It's blessed food. So simply by consuming this food that's been offered to the deities and blessed, you are purifying your vessel. So it's a way to bring in new people that are interested in this philosophy and lifestyle, and using food as the bridge for that. It's actually how my mother got introduced to that lifestyle was.
What do they serve there?
Yeah, drink the Kool-Aid. Watch out. It's just really good vegetarian Indian inspired.
Like dal and
dal and rice and subji and samosas and all of these
a
really
good dal and you move to Mississippi.
Yeah, yeah, they'll hook you with it. So that's a smart. It's a smart scheme. It's a smart scheme, you know. So it was great. We had Sunday feasts, like I said, where it would be the community, and then people would bring people from outside the community to listen to a lecture mm-hmm. from the Bhagavad Gita, where mm-hmm. they're explaining these paragraphs from the Bhagavad Gita, explaining, you know, who is Krishna, what is going on, who's Arjuna, and in the kind of grand scheme of a larger story or volume of text called the Mahabharata, which mm-hmm. is a very, just kind of like the more traditional text of Hinduism. So that was my experience growing up until we moved out when I was about 8 or 9 and moved into a trailer park in Mississippi, being both my parents being two South American immigrants who were also renunciants, material renunciants because mm-hmm. of their spiritual practices. We didn't have much. So we went into a low income community, a trailer park, and just kind of was thrust into the real world, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Looking back, what were like character traits that you, I mean, probably there were some sides that you, looking back, you don't like or you didn't like, but what did it teach you in terms of characteristics that you developed mm-hmm. because of it?
So a couple things that jump out at me immediately. The first of which is I learned how to downplay that side of myself, that mm-hmm. background and culture of kind of who I was, because every time I would go to school, I would hear stories of other kids talking about that community, the Hare Krishna community, in a negative sense, because mm-hmm. they didn't understand necessarily the philosophy. They made rumors. They just didn't understand. Mm-hmm. So you judge what you don't understand mm-hmm. most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I would be very reserved with sharing that I was a part of that community or associated with that community. So I just learned how to kind of hide that part of myself. So that's one aspect, because I wanted to fit in, like any mm-hmm. kid, you know, you want to fit in with your peer group, to be accepted, to be feel like you're a part of something and not an outcast. And so I got good at that. And then the other part was accepting of other people's worldviews. Because mm-hmm. I was a recipient of being judged because of the worldview that I was raised within. And I wanted to be able to coexist with these people without having to be in constant conflict. So even though I was the only vegetarian and all my friends, you know, went hunting and fishing and all of these things, I never really judged them for it. It was just more so like an acceptance of that's just who they are, their beliefs, their what they do. And we can still coexist and be cordial and peaceful. So it's benefited me, to be honest, for what I'm doing now. I feel like that experience really primed me for the position I am now, being an advocate for a plant-based lifestyle and somebody who advocates for veganism and animal welfare and shifting over to eating a predominantly plant-based lifestyle because of all the different benefits and approaching it from a very accepting place of everybody thinks differently. They have their own experience, and it's okay to not have to see it my way. Mm-hmm. But if you're open to learning more, I'm happy to talk about it.
So not judging, but like trying to understand the other person. And also I think a big thing is accepting that you can't convince everyone, and that is completely fine. Maybe that's a skill that you are not aware of, that you probably developed because of that time. You're someone who's really humble. And I think someone who has so much humility. I was thinking of Mississippi, humility. who's just so humble. And I think, is that something, I'm not familiar with the teachings, but is that something that, you know, your family prioritized, teaching you that, that you're not some like special kid that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it humble can be, I guess, interpreted many ways. It's like there's not too many humble bodybuilders, right? It's like how humble can you be if you go on stage and flex your muscles? And you know, it's a very ego-driven sport, yeah. Which I'm not denying that I have ego and my own, mm-hmm. you know, tendencies there. But in regards to learning some of the traits that I have, for sure, my mom played a big role into that. Her just unconditionally acceptance of other people, and very giving and nurturing and just kind of always so kind and gentle. I really learned a lot from her as a role model. And I think that really helped shape who I am as a person today and take mm-hmm. that with me to everywhere, everything that I do. So for sure, my mom.
Probably also the self-discipline, waking up as a kid, 5 a.m. every morning.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah. I mean, you, just like any kid, you didn't like it, you know, you didn't
want to. 5 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. But looking back, you know, it was a really beautiful experience because like I have so many friends now as a, you know, in my 30s mm-hmm. where I'm friends with entrepreneurs and I'm friends with different spiritual communities and they all have the same goal. They're like, I want to buy a plot of land in Costa Rica and build some houses and bring all my friends together and we can create or co-create this sustainable community where we have these core values and mm-hmm. preach about sustainability and kindness and, you know, all these different things. And like, what a beautiful experience that I was raised in one of those. And it took me a while to realize it, that I had such a great upbringing and was surrounded by so much experience that's given me great perspective, you know, to even for what I do now.
1,000,000%.
Yeah. But it's like, it would be nice to go back to a community like that. Like I got to experience that dream that many people.
Would you go back?
Would I go back to Mississippi? No, absolutely not.
I mean, no. Create your own little bubble because there are, I mean, many of those ideas just make a lot of sense. Like, they are like co-living spaces now, especially in Scandinavia, it's a common thing, like in Denmark, where people just live together, especially like families. Everyone has their own apartment, their own place, but you don't have to cook every day. Every day someone else is cooking. So you only cook once or twice per week.
Interesting.
But then you cook for many people.
Interesting.
You don't have to do laundry every day because someone else is doing laundry every day. You can have your own hobbies as a mom because your kids, like someone will take care of your kids. Yeah. Like every day there's someone else and you live together, you know, in a community and it just makes sense. So I think there are many, many, like I would have loved to grow up in a community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too, because it's always who's a part of the community. Mm-hmm. Right. And if I'm thinking just today as myself and in this time period of my life right now, who would I want to be a part of that community? Mm-hmm. I'd be very selective with who I'd want to do those things with and surround myself with. And, you know, they would have to be people that have certain core values. And
what would be those core values?
For sure. Compassion being a big one, integrity, honesty, service, you know, things that I really value and I think would be great pillars in a community if you surround yourself with people of that caliber. So would I do it? Yeah, totally. I could think of many people that I know that I would love to buy a plot of land with and just say, hey, let's go build a big co-living space out here.
Not in Mississippi.
Definitely not in Mississippi, though.
Yeah. Maybe since we're already talking a bit about your story. So you grew up in Mississippi.
Yeah.
At some point, I mean, right now we're in LA. It's probably where your base has been for the last couple of years. How did you end up here? Maybe if you could two.
Yeah, just really quick. I went to college in Louisiana, which is one state over from Mississippi. I got my engineering degree and then I accepted the job offer that was like the furthest away from the South, which is California.
That's how much you loved it.
Yeah. I always just felt called to California. It was either California or Florida. I just wanted to be on the coast. I wanted to be at a place where I had these kind of dreams and like maybe romanticized California as this place that was very progressive and a lot of like things happening and options, you know, growing up in the South, there wasn't that many things to do. We'd have to find ways to entertain ourselves. And here there's so many options and places to explore, and mountains and deserts and snowboarding and surfing. And it's just, I love it out here. So I always felt called to come, and I accepted a job offer in Bakersfield, which is the Mississippi of California. if California was a state, then Bakersfield would be Mississippi, because it's, again, it's like very rural. It's very agricultural. There's like farming, there's cow farms, there's oil fields, there's guys in big jacked up trucks. It just reminds me of Mississippi, and there's nothing wrong with that. It was just the place where I moved whenever I accepted this position as an engineer for an oil and gas company. So I had just quite literally left everything and everybody I knew, put everything that I owned in a Jeep, and drove across the country to start this new chapter of my life, and did that for about 5 years before leaving engineering and moving out of Bakersfield and just transitioning into health and fitness.
Wow. And you left your family, everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. You know, looking back, I definitely felt a calling to remove myself from the environment that I was used to. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a calling for growth and experience. And also, I wanted an opportunity to feel the freedom to be me without like showing up in a new place. I could be whoever I wanted to be. And mm-hmm. for whatever reason, that was really hard in Mississippi and mm-hmm. in Louisiana. Maybe I don't know why in particular, but looking back, I could definitely, there was a big undertone of me wanting to just figure out who I was. And I figured I'd have to do that on my own. So moving across the country, just made sense. And I was nervous and scared, and just ended up doing what I knew at the time, that how I meet people was through the gym. I would just go to the gym. So after work, there's a big bodybuilding culture in Bakersfield. That was the first time I'd been exposed to bodybuilding. I had trained in college, and I had trained in high school too, but I had trained in college and got more into it because I got connected with these group of trainers mm-hmm. and also bartenders. So that we would train really hard throughout the week, and then party really hard on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I still wouldn't miss a session though, but they were the ones that really kind of like, I started to figure out how to structure training programs and really started to examine my food and what I was eating in relation to how I was training. So I took that kind of momentum with me to California and just started applying it even more so, because I didn't have a community out here. So I just went to the gym more frequently and had the means to really invest in like what I was eating and being more intentional with that. So I started to see really great results. Mm-hmm. And then that's when somebody had suggested to me to do a bodybuilding show. They were like, "Hey, you're in great shape. You ever thought about doing a show?" I remember it so distinctly. I was leaving the gym and I just laughed. I was like, "Yeah, right." I was like, "I'm not going to do a show. Like, first of all, I can't, I'm not big enough. And then second of all, I'm an engineer. I don't, you know," like there was this real, sense of identity around being an engineer, that I had to be this version of myself that was very serious and very composed and put together and not curious and all the other things that I had kind of made up for myself. So eventually I was like, I'll do it. I think it's good to have a goal. I'm not doing anything else. It'll give me something to aim for. And I decided to do that first show about, like, I don't remember how. At this point, it was like 9 or 10 weeks before the day of the show, I decided. So it was just enough time for me to get prepared for the show. Mm-hmm. And right at that time was when I also made the decision to go vegan, because I had watched my mom, of all people, had sent me a video on Facebook. And my mom's always sending me videos. Like, I can open up my phone right now and I'll have like 10 either YouTube links or reels, or in my DMs, my mom sending me reels and stuff, just like constantly. And I watch them, Mom. I watch them. but this one I definitely did watch, and it happened to be an inside look at a dairy farm. Mm-hmm. And they had shown this really disturbing footage of these cows being mistreated, and cows that had literally windows cut into their intestines so that you could go reach your hand in and see what they were eating. And I was just like, this is terrible. And also connected to all of these pumps and gauges and tubes. And it was oddly similar to the processing plant that I worked at as an engineer. And I had made this connection that it just kind of disturbed me. I was like, wow, I'm over here working in this industry as an engineer. Really, my role is to maximize the efficiency of basically the output of these liquids, which was gas, through this processing plant, which also has pipes and vessels and pumps and valves and all these things. And then I saw this image of these cows connected with pipes and valves and pumps and all these things. Mm-hmm. And I just made the connection. I was like, wow, this is also an industry where they're extracting these liquids. And there's a person there that's being paid to maximize the efficiency of that process. And by me buying that product, I'm paying that guy's salary and keeping the lights on in this industry that doesn't feel good for me to support. So I made that decision to just not support it anymore by just opting out and choosing to not consume or buy dairy products anymore. At the time I was vegetarian. So that was a big part of my diet too.
Sponsor of today's episode is VivoLife. I've been taking VivoLife supplements for already more than 4 years. What makes VivoLife so special? Many things. First of all, they test every single product for heavy metals, pesticides, herbicides, PCBs. They focus on creating high quality supplements. Supplements that I take every single day are the vegan multinutrient. It covers potential critical nutrients on a vegan diet like vitamin B12, vitamin D, iodine, a product that gives me a lot of freedom because I don't have to supplement everything separately. Second supplement that I take every day, omega-3 for my brain and heart health, really important, EPA and DHA. Last but not least, number 3, creatine. Obviously really interesting for athletes here, people who want to build strength, muscle mass. If you use the link that you find in the description, you will get a free bonus. And if you want to support the channel, always use the link whenever you order. Thank you, VivoLife, for sponsoring this episode. Let's continue.
Were you concerned at all?
Yeah.
Said yes to your first bodybuilding competition.
Yeah, and it wasn't overnight. Like there was a dilemma within me that I was like,
your mom kept sending you more. And more
well, money. It was like, I don't want to do this. I don't know how to do the other thing though. So it took me a little bit of
how long was that ago?
2015.
Oh wow.
Early 2015. Yeah. So it's been 8 years now. But I just remember thinking to myself, like, what am I going to eat? Because at that time I was vegetarian. I was, you know, growing up vegetarian, the main vegetarian options on the menu were normally kind of centered around cheese, whether it's like a cheese pizza. You know, I couldn't have the pepperoni pizza, but I got the cheese pizza. I couldn't have the beef and bean burrito, but I could have the cheese and bean burrito. I couldn't have the chicken quesadilla, but I could have the cheese quesadilla, you know, like things like that. So I have a grilled cheese, you know, like I just like kind of really relied on cheese and whey protein. And so when I cut it out, I didn't know how I was going to react or respond, and kind of had to simultaneously learn how to integrate more whole food plant-based foods into my diet. I had to switch over to plant-based protein powder. I had to kind of relearn how to cook different foods, like including more lentils and chickpeas and things like that. And yeah, it just figured it out while also trying to figure out how to track macros for the first time, which was a challenge because I had hired a coach who just gave me some macros. He was like, just follow these. And I was just like, all right, well, I'll just kind of figure it out by like entering different ingredients into like my fitness pal or whatever I was using at the time to see if I could make it work and then kind of reverse engineer it and then cook the food after I made it work in the app. So that was like my process.
What place, did you win the competition?
Or? I did.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, it was a local show. It was a local show, small amount of people that showed up. And I ended up sweeping. I did like the novice and the open, and I ended up winning like all the categories. It's pretty ridiculous, to be honest. Like this particular organization, the IMBA, which is a natural league, they just give out so many different types of awards. They gave out like best poser, most symmetrical, overall, class winner, overall winner. So I walked away with like 6 trophies for my first show. And of course, when you win something, when you do well at it, you want to keep going. And you're like, this is cool. I want to do it. It felt really good. And I remember after the show, people around town knew that I won the show, and they would come up to me and ask me, you know, I want to do a show. Like, how do I, like, what did you eat? How did you train? And then I'd tell them, I was like, well, I'm vegan and I did it plant-based. And they're just like, what, you're vegan? No way. And like, it was just an interesting response, but I would see the curiosity of people and just kind of the shock and surprise by people. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, more people should know about this. Like, people should know that it's possible and there's an alternative kind of route that someone could take that could yield similar results to these other guys that are on stage. And they should know that it's a possibility at least. So I'm going to keep doing it and I'm going to keep talking about it. And that's how I started posting on social media. And it just kind of kept growing and growing and growing. And here we are.
And here we are.
And here we are.
And I mean, many have seen you and the Game Changers and are familiar with the fitness kind of side of your life.
Yeah.
I want to talk a bit about the spiritual side. We trained the other day at Goals and talked about spirituality, law of attraction, personal growth for like 60 minutes. I was like, damn it, this should have been a podcast. So maybe also because it's interesting for me as a creator, when did you decide to shift? I don't want to say shift away, but also open up a new category in your professional life, talking about spirituality and personal growth and law of attraction.
Yeah, I think that it's always somewhat been a part of my content, but maybe more subtle because I have always felt like a spiritual person and a spiritual being and talked about, you know, when people would ask me why I don't eat meat, my response was, I would share that, yes, it was for health reasons. But really, I'm an ethical vegan. I always have been. I've been an ethical vegetarian since birth. That's why I never ate meat, because it was not part of, it didn't align with my core value of compassion and nonviolence. So I would never really lead with that, because anytime I would lead with that, people would tune out and people would kind of retract, because once you start talking about ethics, people can feel defensive. And once somebody's defenses are up, you're not going to change anybody's mind. They're going to stand stronger in their position. So my approach was always to lead with the health benefits as a Trojan horse. As a Trojan horse to kind of sneakily deliver this other message of like, hey, like, you know, there's a way
just
to,
just like your mother did.
Yeah,
hey,
exactly.
Nima, watch this video.
Watch this video, right? So it wasn't until later that I really started to lean into the reasons and benefits from a spiritual perspective of eating a plant-based diet and kind of keeping your vessel clean, in the sense of like everything that we eat is energy. Food is energy, and that energy has a certain vibrational signature to it. And when you think of meat and where it comes from, there's a certain energetic frequency that's associated with that. And if you imagine what it's like for the experience of an animal at the time of death, or heading into a factory farm or a slaughterhouse, you can imagine what that experience would be like, you know, chaotic, anxious, terrifying, scared, fearful, all of these kind of lower level emotions, stress, adrenaline, all of these things that kind of don't feel good as in our experience. So you imagine in the animal's experience too. So whenever at the time of death, you know, that energy is stamped and it's imprinted on the flesh and the meat that gets packaged up, delivered on your plate, you cook it, you eat it, it becomes a part of you. This is, you eat a banana, a couple hours later, that banana becomes cells and it becomes muscle and becomes these different parts of you. It gets broken down and becomes integrated with who you are. So energy is no different. So when you think about it from that perspective, opting out of those energies and opting for the energies that kind of don't have that signature associated with some more plants, it can purify your vessel. And when you have a clean vessel, that the signal becomes more strong. It's like kind of tuning your radio signal to what's happening inside of you. And you can be a little bit more introspective. You can notice the signals that your body is sending you without all this stress and anxiety and all the other emotions that can come. So that's like more of the spiritual reasons to eat a plant-based diet. So you can strengthen your connection with source, with whatever you want to call collective consciousness and the intelligence that lives within each one of us. So that's another main reason why I am plant-based and am vegan and talk about it from that perspective. So I can kind of strengthen my ability to connect to that within me.
And this side of you, like personal growth, spirituality, was that something that came because of your upbringings, or was it something that
at some
point you picked up a book and it was called The Secret?
No, I actually never read The Secret.
Did you did it?
No, I haven't read The Secret.
It was the first book I have ever read. Like, I mean, I read books before at school. I don't know how it is in the US, but in Germany, we just reread a lot, but usually it's fiction. And I was never into it. I was always like, oh, I don't want to read it. So I always ended up buying summaries of the book.
Smart.
And then at some point, my sister gave me the book. She gave it to me. It was The Secret. And she said, Axel, this time when you read it, because I was really struggling with life and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And she said, just read it. Don't just promise me one thing. Don't judge it.
Yeah.
And the parts that don't resonate with you, just skip them. But read it until the end and then judge. And then tell me what you think.
Yeah.
And I remember texting her, like, you know, like there is a lot of things that I didn't resonate with and still, like, I don't think it's just a really good book. But there are many great ideas. And for the first time, I was exposed to, you know, personal growth and like, my decisions that I make every day, they have an effect on me. Or when I think it was an example in that book that if you go through a city with a smile, you will have people who smile back. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, but more people will be friendly to you.
Yeah.
And if you do the opposite, like people will probably not give you a smile. It's like, damn it. And also like when someone enters the room, I can sense energy.
Mm-hmm.
So how was it for you? A video from your mom?
No. So I was very similar to you. I never liked reading fiction books. It felt very much like an obligation to read a story. And I did not find the entertainment value from the story. I just saw it as an obligation, as a project, an assignment that I had to do in high school. So I very rarely read for fun. And it wasn't, this is funny. It wasn't until, I had a breakup in college and I had kind of like, wasn't proud of myself for the way that I showed up in that relationship. And I had for the first time decided to like do something about it and try to be better as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I discovered, I had bought like 3 or 4 books. Cool. And, I can't remember the names of the other books, but I do remember one book, and that was called The Game, which was like not a personal development book whatsoever. But what I learned from that book, The Game is, I don't know if you've ever heard it. I think it's Neil Strauss that wrote it. It's basically like a story about a pickup artist and how he like goes to creates this crazy life about picking up women and these like kind of NLP strategies of like how to manipulate people essentially, but to get what you want. But essentially it was the first time that I had kind of like forced myself out of my normal behaviors to like try to show up differently than how I was showing up, in the sense of like putting myself out there and kind of reintegrating into the world after this relationship as trying to be a different person and somebody that I was intentional about, somebody that I was choosing to be rather than behaving from default. You know, and that was kind of my introduction to personal development. I mean, not that book in particular, but that was the kind of way that I was approaching it. Like, how can I intentionally choose to improve myself? And that led to other books. yeah, what is it? How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, books about habit and behavior change. Like, I just got really fascinated with how we operate and how we can become more aware of that. So the challenge here was for me, but I would read these books, but I was very much still in a analytical place, because like anybody and like everybody, my childhood was difficult for me. Moments of it were challenging for me, where I kind of taught myself how to avoid feeling certain things and kind of analyze certain things instead of feel them or compartmentalize them and avoid it. So I would read these books and understand it intellectually, but I could never fully embody it, because whenever you show up differently, you have to start to the feeling, you know, like you have to show up and feel the things that have hurt you, have traumatized you, to process those things so you can release them and create space for this new way of operating. And it wasn't, you know, I would claim to be somebody that was into personal development, but I still had so many shadows and so many parts of myself that I was showing up out of integrity. And still, I'm sure I still have shadows and blind spots and out of integrity in certain areas. We all are. I'm not perfect by any means, but I was definitely, looking back, can admit that I was. And that was big for me, because it wasn't until another breakup.
The good old breakups.
Breakups are catalysts, man. They are such,
relationships in general.
Relationships, romantic relationships are especially are such catalysts for growth.
Yeah. 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 If you have a willingness to open up and.
Yeah. Yeah. For somebody to hold a mirror up to you and say, look, have a good look.
You know? Isn't it funny? Because actually, you know, it's the people we are closest to, it's the easiest to pick up a fight with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the easy, like the people you want to hurt the least. It's so easy to trigger them, especially if you spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
I find it so weird and tricky. Yeah. You know, there are so many people out there. You probably, like, I'm sure if I would go through the gym and have an individual conversation with everyone, there will be people I wouldn't like resonate with.
Yeah.
But I would never ever pick a fight with them. Yeah.
Intentionally.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But like people you're close with, and you're getting married soon, so yeah. I'm interested to hear your perspective. But especially with my partner, if we spend a lot of time together, I can, like, it's so easy to trigger each other. I'm like,
yeah,
why would I start with, I could start a fight with anyone in the world, but I choose the person I love the most.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Have you ever heard of the concept of imago? Okay, so there's a really great book for anybody out there that's in a relationship. I think everybody should read it. It's called Getting the Love You Want. I forget the name of the authors, but it's so good at explaining why we may be attracted to the people that we're attracted to. Mm. And there's this concept of imago, which I believe is a Greek word for image. And it is this compository image of the primary caretakers in your early formative years, the positive qualities and the qualities that you didn't receive from them. So we tend to be attracted to partnerships that embody those good qualities, because we're like, oh yeah, that reminds me, it feels like home, it feels safe, it feels like love, and then seek out or seek to subconsciously reconcile with a partner the traits or the needs that weren't met from our caretakers. So even if you can look back and examine some old relationships, you might be able to make some correlations between your primary caretakers, mom, dad, grandma, whoever was most prevalent in your life, and some of the relationships that you sought out and found yourself in, because our brain is kind of wired to reconcile that in a sense. And sometimes we project these unrealistic expectations on our partners to show up in the way that we didn't receive whenever we were younger. So that book blew my mind whenever I read it. It makes so much sense, and it just allows you to kind of soften the approach of when you blame your partner for doing something. And we have these sensitive areas about us. When we get triggered, that's a sign. It's a teacher. Mm-hmm. It's pointing at something. Hey, this is sensitive. There's a boundary that's crossed. There's a fear that's being had. There's a narrative that exists that is being activated right now. And you can use that. It's challenging to, but you have to have, find a process to be able to identify, like, or like maybe even a process to say like, hey, I'm being activated right now. These are the feelings that are coming up. I don't can't explain what it is exactly or why it's happening, but this is what I'm experiencing right now, and kind of depersonalize it to, it's not like you're making me feel this way. It's like, I'm feeling this way as a result of this stuff, you know, and kind of depersonalizes it in a way to where you can navigate those triggers a little bit better. But that
my therapist always tells me in those moments when one of my wounds get triggered, and there are many wounds, she says, or like she gave me the advice, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever received, just say ouch out loud when you just and this has been a game changer. If my girlfriend Mariana would sit here, she would say like,
that's funny.
Because it's so much easier for her than to see, oh, you're hurt right now. It's not because of me. It's not because I did something wrong. It's a wound that got triggered, and it's my responsibility now to deal with it and not just push it away. And, you know, sounds like you've done your research. Like my old approach would have been the silent treatment.
Yeah.
And just say like, everything is fine. Everything is fine. Because it, like, I'm also a reflective guy. I know it's not a big deal, but when a wound gets triggered, it feels like it big feels deal. Like exactly the time when it got created in the first place.
Yeah That's what happens. I mean, our nervous system goes back to, it reverts back to the original maybe experience that we felt whenever it happened, which created the kind of wound, so to speak. And sometimes whenever that wound is reactivated, we get so flooded with emotions that even speaking logically, there's a certain part of your brain that gets turned off. Like you have, for those watching, imagine this to be like your early human brain, the reptilian brain. Right. And then on top of that, we have like the prefrontal cortex, which is our ability to communicate with each other. This is where that part of the brain is. Whenever we get activated and flooded with emotions, this part goes offline, and this reptilian part of ourselves just takes over. So even communicating, articulating what we're feeling becomes extremely difficult. So if you can imagine a good way to navigate those moments is to revert back to an early primitive version of yourself, where maybe even a childlike version of yourself, how would you communicate the feeling of what you're experiencing? It could just be boiled down into three words, like, I feel blank. That's a start. That's a really good start to identify the general experience that you might be having at the moment. And then you can expand upon that and learn to unpack that, you know, in a healthy way. It's just like a good practice to start trying to do, because most people don't share what they're feeling. They just kind of like imply it or expect you to read their mind of what they're feeling. So getting into the habit of sharing how you feel in the moment kind of prevents this kind of build up of resentment and all these other things that end up being a blowout and a big fight. Is like having that little uncomfortable conversation when it comes up is much more effective than having.
What helps you in those moments when you get triggered, when a wound comes up for you?
Kind of just what I just said, you know, just say it, you know, like, hey, I'm feeling this way right now. Like, this is what's coming up for me.
What helps me is might sound weird, but to walk away, but intentionally saying like, hey, I'm not. What you just described, I know I'm feeling that right now. I can't have the compassion right now. So I'm just leaving the situation for like 5 or 10 minutes. I'm going to go breathe some air or maybe eat some food. Often I get triggered when I'm either hungry or sleep deprived. it's food.
No, that's a great actual point there too. I think that's a really effective way. The key is like saying it.
Not just running away and slamming a door and burning out
down the driveway, but like just saying like, hey, I can't have this conversation right now. I'm going to go self-soothe and co-regulate my nervous system and then come back and be able to have this conversation in a more.
Yeah. Oprah and Dr. Bruce Perry, they wrote a beautiful book about it. And that was one of the key takeaways, you know, to not just in my relationship, but also in business meetings. I mean, it rarely happens that I get so triggered that someone like pisses me really off that I have to leave the room, but it does happen. And then it's always better for me to, you know, go breathe some fresh air.
Yeah.
Maybe take a cold shower or best case exercise. I'm always a different person afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can relate, but those are just really, practical ways. I like practical tips.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe going back to this community that you would create, what would you, if you could think of a...
It's starting to sound like a cult, man. This so-called community off the grid community. Where we're all going to be vegan. And what else are we going
to
do?
Do they have to be vegan? Do you have to be vegan in the community?
In my cult, yeah.
Yeah, okay. In your cult, let's call it cult.
let's not call it my cult.
In your community, what would you, if there would be some kind of guidelines, some mantras maybe, what would be a mantra that comes up? I think you mentioned one. I take full responsibility for my emotions.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's probably a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another one that pops up to mind?
This is a hard question. I might have to like brainstorm this and come up with some tenets for my some core tenets for this so-called cult community.
Hummus is served every day.
Yeah, that's the only dish. I don't know. How can I, if something along the lines of like, how can I, like, what's the most loving thing I can do in this moment?
Mm.
You know, like that's a good way to kind of approach a difficult decision. You know, it's like, well, how's the most loving way I can approach a conversation that's difficult, you know, or say something that's going to be difficult to hear, you know? So I think that would be maybe one of them. I'd have to brainstorm to get some better ones, but that's just the first one that comes up. And everybody has to train every day, do some type of physical activity.
Leg day included.
Yeah, leg day
included. Training legs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone has to take veg supplements.
Everyone.
We didn't talk about veg, but maybe let's combine those two topics, spirituality and like also business, because I think many people would say, like, especially with your upbringing, it kind of surprises me that you ended up building businesses, because you grew up without materialistic stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And now you drive a car.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because that's actually a mindset that I've had to rewire or reframe around material possessions and money and finances. And because we were so spiritually rich, but materialistically poor, there was a certain almost aversion to money in a sense that we wanted it, we needed it, but also having too much of it was a bad thing. Like it was an attachment, you know, a suffering. They equate attachments to sufferings. So that was a thing for me to kind of like break free from this poverty mindset, and not to say that it was intentional, it was just kind of the environment that the circumstances that we were in, you know? So it was interesting to break free from it in a sense of not feeling bad about pursuing those things.
Mm. And how did you do that? Like, how did you break free from that?
It being a byproduct of doing what I love. If money comes as a byproduct of me doing what I love, and what I love is service, then money is just a reflection of that service.
Mm.
And I can feel good about that. And that can be, money is a tool, it's a currency. It flows in whatever, you know, direction you want to put it towards. It can be something that creates community. It could be something that builds houses. It could be whatever you want to use it for. But I had to kind of stop rejecting opportunity and money for a while. I felt bad about having success, and that I'm sure maybe some people can relate to that, oh, coming 100%. From humble beginnings and having a spiritual kind of upbringing to think that success is equal to just negative associations. So yeah, it's been interesting, but coming back to the business part of it, a business, in my opinion, is, especially if you're an entrepreneur, your business is an extension of you. It's a reflection of you, the individual, and it shows up as you, how you run your business, the organization of your business, the service, the quality, the intention that you put behind something is a reflection of you and your own discipline and your own intentions and your own care for quality and service and whatever else. So whenever you kind of work on yourself as an individual and become more self-aware, then those changes will start to reflect in business as well. So whenever I started my supplement company, it wasn't ever to necessarily like be rich off of it. It was to provide something that I wanted whenever I was bodybuilding and couldn't find a brand that had all the things that I wanted and didn't. There were companies that were offered a vegan product, but their other line of supplements were not vegan. And I felt it didn't feel great to be sending my audience and traffic and people that followed me to brands that made money off of products that had animal products in them. So I was thinking to myself, man, I just wish there was a brand that was just like fully aligned and I felt good about buying from it. So that was kind of like one of the reasons why I wanted to start Veg. And then again, implementing those same core values into the way that we operate our company and making decisions based off of, you know, the customer in mind and not so much our bottom line. You know, I could make our products way cheaper if I wanted to, if money was the outcome that I was after, you know, and not quality and caring about what people put into their body. I could get ingredients for dirt cheap and 3 to 5x my margins on most of my products, but I refuse to do that because I'm not going to cut corners simply because I know what comes as a risk from doing that. Is people are consuming the product that I'm putting out and I want to stand proudly behind anything that I put out. Mm-hmm. So if that requires me to scale my business slower, if it stifles my growth in some way, I'm okay with that because I feel good about the way I'm operating my business.
Mm-hmm. How does spirituality, the law of attraction, and like personal growth help you in the business kind of sense?
Man, it is infinitely helpful. Infinitely helpful.
Do you have an example?
Yeah. I mean, if you think business is going to be hard, then it's going to be hard. And you're going to attract hard experiences. If you think it's going to be easy, then it's going to become easier. It's all about your perspective on things and what you think about and how you feel about it. And, you know, there's been times where I've implemented I try to really use the law of attraction as a framework for me to make all my decisions and really check in with myself and see how I'm feeling about something and using my gut feeling as the guide for me to make decisions, not necessarily like logic. Sometimes my gut doesn't match up with the logic, but I really trust my intuition and my inner being, so to speak, that's always has my back and is guiding me towards making these decisions that feel good. And when you feel good and are in a higher emotional vibration, you become more magnetic for whatever it is that you want. Your ability to create becomes stronger. Your ability to manifest relationships, clients, customers, business partnerships, all of it just becomes that much more potent. So for example, I share this example because I think it's appropriate for just finding alignment, which what I'm talking about when I'm saying like feeling good in your body is a way of finding alignment and you seeing or thinking about something that is congruent with what your inner being sees and thinks about it. And your inner being knows you to be a powerful creator. And sometimes whenever we have self-doubt, that doesn't feel good because we don't see ourselves as a powerful creator, but our inner being sees ourselves that way. So that's when you know that there's some disparity there, and that's a sign for you to recalibrate to your inner being's perspective on it. So whenever you do find alignment, opportunities flow to you. You don't have to work as hard because you find alignment and then take action. People kind of mistake manifestation as this act of just like sitting back and telling, saying out loud, I want this. And they're like, where is it? Where is it? No, it requires taking inspired action.
Mm-hmm.
And you break down the word inspired, it means in spirit, like living in line with your spirit that exists within you. And when you take an action, when you're from operating from that place, you become a powerful manifester, very powerful. So finding alignment with yourself and then doing the things that you want to do, it becomes a much easier process. So for example, whenever I quit my engineering job, I had so much weight lifted off my shoulders. I finally left the industry and career that was not making me happy. I was very stressed out about it and anxious and dreadful about going to work every day. I didn't enjoy my work at all. I didn't really care to be there. I didn't care what we were talking about. And I was focusing on the things I didn't care about and didn't like and talking about. It was just my constant reality. And then whenever I decided to leave my job, immediately this sense of relief washed over me. Like, wow, like whew. I'm a little nervous because I don't know what I'm going to do next, but at the same time, I don't have to do this anymore, which this was not making a pleasant experience. So as soon as I left that same week, very same week, I got a call from James Wilkes and the Game Changers documentary asking me if I wanted to be a part of this project, and boom, that happened. Then again, I'm doing what I love. I'm talking about what I care about. I'm like doing the things that make me happy. I'm finding alignment. I'm training. I'm going in public speaking, doing all these things that like help me find that alignment and attract the type of future that I want for myself. And then boom, muscle and fitness cover. Boom. I connect with my business partner and we have a wonderful business partnership together. It just, everything tends to become easier. And opportunities come to you when you are doing what you love and consistently putting yourself in that state and surrounding yourself with people that are matching that part of you. And sometimes it doesn't make sense to people that right. Like if I were to tell like my boss whenever I was quitting my job, like what I plan on doing, might have had doubts and that might not make any logical sense, but you know, we're here to create the life that we want for ourselves. And if you don't do that, you're just going to work for somebody else's life that they are creating for themselves.
Reminds me, especially the first part you talked about, this episode of books. Maybe we should start a book show. a book by Viktor Frankl.
Oh, yeah.
Man's Search for Meaning. And there is this part where he talks, I'm probably going to mess up the quote, but it's about stimulus and your response, and that in everything that happens to you, you have the ability to choose your own response. Basically saying nothing has meaning until you give it meaning. Mm-hmm. You decide what this means to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what you just said is that you are choosing the perspective. If you are choosing, that's what you said earlier.
Yeah.
If you keep repeating, this is hard, this is hard, this is hard, it's going to feel hard,
yeah.
Even though it's not the reality. And it still sometimes happens today that, you know, in my head, it's such a big thing to write this one email, but then you actually do it and it's like 2 minutes. I'm like, yeah. Why did I tell myself this?
Yeah.
And I think we will never reach this point of perfection, but I think that's where the journey starts for everyone mm-hmm. who's listening. Maybe you're exposed to this idea for the first time, becoming aware of how you talk to yourself,
mm-hmm.
becoming aware of the thoughts that you are thinking. Yeah. That's already a big, big step out of, you know, your current bubble.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, your thoughts shape your reality, literally.
Mm.
So what you think about most, what you focus on most is what you get. And you can sit there and think to yourself, well, why would I think my way into an unpleasant experience? Why would I manifest this for myself?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a byproduct of thinking by default and thinking and focusing on the things that don't make you feel good. Again, like, any experience can be just purely an experience until you give it meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose how to feel about it. And you can choose to feel the thoughts that feel bad, or you can choose the thoughts that feel better about it and maybe tell that story a little bit differently and choose to see things a little bit differently. You know, I could look back at my childhood and think of all the difficult parts that I went through and choose to feel bad about them in the sense of, like, yes, they were challenging for sure. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to bypass that at all, but at the same time, grateful for those experiences because they really led me to where I am today. And they really taught me so much grit and so much about myself and really allowed me to transcend some of these beliefs that are now an integral part of my coaching and teaching other people how to believe in themselves and how to retrain your brain to think about how everything that you're experiencing is an opportunity to grow. And even in the moment, if it's really hard, if you can think back of all the other hard moments in your life and how you managed to make it through and how that led to another beautiful moment. And if you wouldn't have gone through that, you wouldn't have experienced this beautiful mm-hmm. moment. Like there's opportunity to be like, okay, I know this is hard and I'm learning. There's an opportunity for growth here. What is this teaching me? And how can I focus on what the expansive lesson is in this?
Yeah, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Nima, I could keep talking to you for the next 2 hours, but I think we got to wrap up.
Yeah.
The final question comes back to my wonderful girlfriend. We played a game yesterday, and I knew this will be the final question for Nima. It's a card game, and it's called Empowering Questions. You ask your significant other empowering questions, and you think about it. And a question that I really liked, even though it's really simple, is what advice would your 5 years younger self give you right now? Usually it's the other way around. But yeah. I really like that perspective. For me, while I give you a bit of time to think about it, for me it was, Axel, don't take life so seriously. Have fun, because it was 5 years ago was the time when I just, you know, I sold everything I had. I traveled around the world. I was backpacking, volunteering at schools in India. And I worked so hard that I forgot to have fun.
Mm.
And my 5 years younger self would say, no worries, chill out, have some fun.
Yeah. I think my 5 years ago would be very similar to that. I think he would tell me, like, dude, look at all what you've been able to accomplish and do for yourself. Like, you're doing great. You can chill out and enjoy it more and really appreciate where you are, because, you know, that version of myself was really dreaming of the life that I have now, and now I'm living it. So just learn how to appreciate it.
Yeah. Same here. All right, Nima, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, man.
It's been an honor. Always glad to talk to you, glad to connect. And I just remembered 5 years ago, I think we met approximately 5 years ago. And when you said, like, I'm living the life that I dreamt of, I'm like, it's the same thing. But sometimes, you forget what you have accomplished. You're like so in the moment that you're like, damn it. Like, sometimes it's good to look back and reflect and be proud of what you have already accomplished.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a good thought for you, my dear listener, to leave the conversation with, to ask yourself, like, what are maybe 3 things that I've accomplished in the last couple of years that I'm really proud of? And then that puts you into the right energy to attract the things.
Yeah. Appreciation.
Yeah. It's really 100%. All right. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on social media. Connect with us. Share this episode with a friend, maybe your mother or your son or your daughter.
All the moms out there.
All the moms out there. We love you. Thank you so much.
All right. That's it. Yes. Thank you.